Welcome to Leadership Everywhere, the podcast on leadership in the 21st century. To ask questions and search for answers is a central aspect of our humanity. This is a creative act. In this podcast, I ask questions about leadership and explore them with you. By asking questions, I want to stimulate your imagination and create new images of leadership. This is episode 9, and it's about language and being. Language and Being is the title of a fascinating book by Kübra Gümüşay. I chose this title for this podcast episode because language shapes our identity, our thinking and feeling, the way we perceive the world, and the way we are perceived. Language can create community that can even change the world. Think of Martin Luther King's famous "I Have a Dream," which was the starting point of the American Civil Rights Movement. Bertha von Suttner's "Lay Down Your Arms" was the starting point of a worldwide peace movement, as it had never been seen before. Apart from these great examples, language also shapes our daily life. Words can be uplifting or humiliating, bring us together or apart. Here's a little story from everyday life. Years ago, I rode in a car with a Lebanese family, friends of ours. The father wanted to take his son to soccer. He got lost, desperately trying to find the soccer field. His son, who would be very late by now, said, "Dad, I'm very sorry that you have so much trouble getting me to sports." I was amazed. I would have rather expected the son to blame his father, to say, "I will be late because you did not find the way, I'll miss the game, this is really stupid," or something like this. The son's choice of words expressed his perception of the situation, namely, how hard his father was trying to get him to sports. Language is powerful. The way we use language expresses how we see ourselves, how we feel, and what we do. Recently, I read an article by a Swiss headhunter company. It said that the tone at work has become much rougher and is characterized by a pecking order in which you can only get ahead through ruthlessness. Expressed through bullying, threatening, condemning, and denying, politeness is labeled as do-gooding. This is an interesting phenomenon. The word good by itself is something positive, something desirable. Do-gooder, however, has a clearly negative connotation in this context. How can that be? Well, when the model of success in the company is called ruthlessness, aggressiveness, and lack of empathy, expressed through language, the polite, appreciative person becomes a despised do-gooder. It is not only the case in Switzerland. The conclusion of the study is that it is high time to make room for politeness again, because it is indispensable social glue, especially in times of crisis. "Politeness is wisdom," said philosopher Arthur Schopenhauer. Conversely, bad behavior is stupidity. There's some truth to it. Ruthlessness creates unhealthy pressure, which leads to conflicts, demotivation, and ultimately a loss of productivity. Are you aware of how important it is to express yourself? Do you notice it when language is abusive or excludes others? Have you ever experienced language as discriminatory? Many misunderstandings arise because people live in their own world of thought and do not express themselves. Or think of how much confusion can arise because language is used incorrectly, inaccurately, or thoughtlessly. And some of you will probably think now of instances when you have been hurt by language. Abusive language doesn't just come from the choice of words. We give power to words in the way and when we use them, the tone we use, and the posture we adopt. Language has an impact on what we imagine and therefore on what we can imagine and what we think is normal. If you keep hearing hostile or stereotypical remarks about a person or a group, at some point you get the feeling that it's just normal or okay to talk that way, and you don't even notice it anymore. This is the ground on which disrespect and discrimination are born. Take the highly controversial topic of gender-neutral language. This applies in particular to avoiding the default use of the masculine he when referring to a person of unknown gender. The popular argument for keeping generic masculine forms is everyone is included by default. Unfortunately, this is not true. People actually have men in mind when they think of the masculine form, as has been proven in many studies. Conversely, many women and people of different genders do not feel included. They do not feel addressed by the generic masculine. Originally, women were actually not included in the masculine form. This form comes from a time when women were not allowed to take up many professions or were excluded from professional life altogether. There were no female employees or bosses or doctors or scientists. This has changed. Only our language still sends the old signals. In English, gender-neutral language usually uses the neuter they as a third-person singular. In German, with its grammatical gender, it's much more complicated. In the written form, we have found a relatively simple solution with asterisk, internal I or colon. It's more difficult in spoken German. Many find the use of both the masculine and feminine forms at all instances cumbersome and detrimental to the flow of the spoken language. I tend to agree to that. At the same time, it's enormously important for me that men, women, and other sexes feel included. In the German version of this podcast, I found another way. After consulting with a number of female colleagues, I decided to alternate between the masculine and feminine forms and to make sure that both forms occur in a balanced way in an episode. What's your opinion about gender-neutral language? Have you ever thought about what speechlessness means? What prevents people from contributing equally? How do you feel when you speak in a foreign language? When talking about language as the most important means of communication, we also need to talk about speech and speechlessness. Does everyone have the same opportunity to speak? Not only speech, but also speechlessness can exclude and promote discrimination. In the world of work, women are still most often affected by this. Karpowitz-Mendelberg, the authors of The Silent Sex, found the following in a study. On average, women spoke only 2/3 as much as a man. And a lack of voices meant a lack of perspectives. They didn't bring up the things they had previously said in service that were close to their hearts. Women were also more likely to be routinely interrupted. This could be a "I don't believe that," or "that's not wrong," or someone simply talked over her or ignored her. Unfortunately, it was primarily men who exhibited such behaviors. The researchers also asked group members individually who was most influential in their group. Talking time predicted everything. Whoever spoke up the most won. It follows the same conditions that produce disproportionate silence among women also produce disproportionate authority among men. One can observe a similar phenomenon when it comes to people who have to speak in a foreign language. The shyness of not being able to express themselves correctly and without errors, or being exposed to stereotypes because of an accent, can cause people to remain silent. You may have observed this in yourself when attending a meeting conducted in a foreign language, let's say in German. If you think your German is not so good, do you contribute fully? Or do you prefer to say nothing so as not to make a mistake? Sitting at the table does not automatically mean being equally involved. On a social level, this is the phenomenon that can exclude whole groups from participating. How can you use language in a way that motivates and involves as many people as possible? What can you do to ensure that no one in your environment is left without voice? Have you had any experiences of your own? There are a simple ground rules that lead to a positive, participatory and respectful use of language. It makes no difference whether it is in written or spoken form. First, put your focus on solution, not problem. Solution-focused language generates emotions that put people in a motivated state. For example, think about your weekly team meeting. You can greet everyone in a friendly manner and jump in with the question, "What went particularly well last week?" If there are difficulties, you can try formulations such as, "What can we do to solve this complaint in the best possible way? Does someone need more support so we can achieve our project goal? Who has suggestions for solutions?" The same meeting could also run with a problem focus. Then it would sound something like this. You start that you don't really have time and everything is going badly right now. Customer X is upset. Or an error has occurred in a process and this has now negative consequences. The whole thing is a disaster. Everyone has to pull themselves together. Which language will motivate your team to solve the problem? Problem talking creates problems. Solution talking creates solutions. I first used this quote from Steve DeShazer in a strategy meeting back in 2007 and have internalized it ever since. It's a powerful mindset. Try it out. The second aspect is make sure everyone gets a chance to speak up. Encourage employees and colleagues who speak up little or not at all. Entirely new perspectives may come to light. It may also turn out that there are ambiguities that you didn't anticipate. In meetings, be sure to balance the speaking time of each participant. If a few dominate a meeting or someone does a monologue, other perspectives will miss out. The third point, make sure there is consensus on the tone. In some organizations, there is a blunt, informal tone across all levels. If this is part of the corporate culture, no one need to feel offended when spoken to in this way. Whatever the tone in your organization, it is good when it is at equal footing and by mutual agreement. You'll hear from me again in 2 weeks. The next episode is about purpose and career. Is the classic career out? Is the future jobs with purpose? I welcome suggestions, feedback, constructive criticism, and questions from you. You can find more information and my contact details in the show notes. My articles, blog posts, and tips are available on my website www.abado-coaching.com. And as always, a bon mot along the way. I began to understand that it is experience that shapes a language, and it is language that controls experience. James Baldwin. Keep well. Yours, Gabriela Abado.